Good morning and welcome to All Things Jessamine. I'm Doug Fain. Well, you know, every once in a while in this program, we stop looking at history from way back and do some things that are more current. We've talked to people like John Michael Montgomery, Jared Polson. Well, today we're going to do that again. We're going to talk to a fella who lives here in our county. It has for a while. You will recognize his name and his voice, and we're going to talk to him about his experience of living here, why he's here, and what he thinks about our county. We'll do that right after this word from our sponsor, the Farmers Bank of Jessamine County.
In 1934, a brand new house cost about $6,000. The cost of a gallon of gas was 10 cents. And in 1934, Farmers Bank of Jessamine County opened their doors at 200 North Main Street in Nicholasville, and they've been there ever since. The times may have changed, but Farmers Bank is still here, still proud to be the only locally owned and locally operated bank in Jessamine County. Banking with friends and neighbors. Farmers Bank, equal housing lender. Member FDIC.
Well, good morning and welcome to All Things Jessamine. Glad to have you on this Saturday as we continue to learn about people, places, and things in our county. Now, the majority of our shows are history related, and we talk about a lot of things that used to be in our community. In fact, last week we had a show on a zoo that used to be on South 27 back in the 50s and 60s. But every once in a while, we like to talk to people who are current. They live here in our county, and a lot of people may not realize that they live in our county. A couple that we have had before is people like John Michael Montgomery, for instance, or Jared Polson. Well, today we have a gentleman whose name, voice, and face you will recognize because for, oh my gosh, since the mid-90s, he has been the anchor, I guess, of the Channel 56, Fox 56, 10 o'clock news. Marvin Bartlett, good morning.
Good morning, Doug. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming. And you know, you had contacted me about doing a feature on our old-time radio, and I did not know until then that you lived in our county. I was kind of surprised, just didn't think about it, but we're so glad to have you.
I've been in Jessamine County about 13 years.
Yeah.
We're happy to be here.
Well, we'll get into that a little bit more. First off, we'll learn a little bit about you. Now, kind of tell us, you know, all of us broadcast guys usually have some kind of story about how we got into the business. Tell us where you were born. Tell us a little bit about your family, your upbringing, and how you did get into broadcasting.
Okay. Well, I was born in Grafton, West Virginia, which is a small town of about 6,000 people. I grew up on a farm. Mm-hmm. That's the northern part of West Virginia near Morgantown.
Okay.
And, you know, I was just kind of, it was a very small high school, but I was always the kid they came to narrate a play or to lead the Pledge of Allegiance or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of always was comfortable in front of a crowd. And I came from a family that we got three TV stations by antenna, and we watched the news a lot. And I was just always fascinated by the news. I think, you know, I feel fortunate that I'm doing now what I kind of always wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many people can say that, but when I was in high school, we had a guy come to a career day who was from my town and had gone on to work at some TV stations. I think then it kind of clicked with me. Yeah, you know, this can happen. It doesn't matter where you're from, how big your town is, or what your background is. This is possible. And that's when it really clicked with me that that's the career I wanted to pursue.
Now, you said you were fascinated with the news. Was it the news in general, or was it the process of airing the news? What, or was it both?
Well, I just thought reporters had a really neat job because you know, they just kind of got to see everything unfold and were kind of the first people to know when things were happening. And I was always really at what I really enjoyed was the Charles Kuralt reports on CBS. I loved those on-the-road reports, and I thought, what a neat job he has to just get in this RV and go around the country and meet all these people. And I was a huge fan of him early.
And forward to the future somewhat, you're kind of doing that with this Spirit of the Bluegrass thing that we got together on.
I am. That was always kind of what I will hope to do at some point. I worked for WLEX for 7 years before I went to Fox.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last couple of years there, I pitched a series like this. And in fact, it was called Spirit of the Bluegrass then.
Yeah.
And it was what I've enjoyed doing more than anything I've done.
Oh, it's fun. This program here has been a great enjoyment for me because, you know, growing up here, I knew most of what we were going to talk about. I'm amazed at how much new stuff I've learned, even from people who I've known all my life. You know, you just find out tidbits about people that you just didn't know. So it's very interesting to get into that kind of thing.
Right. And just like your show, I called it Spear of the Bluegrass, so it would be a big umbrella. It didn't have to be just about history or just about arts or just about people. It could be anything.
Really. Anything, All right, so we're back in West Virginia, and at some age, you got to become behind a mic of some sort. How did that happen?
When I was in college, I went to Marshall University in Huntington, and I studied broadcast journalism. And three of my summers there, I worked for my hometown newspaper. Mm-hmm. So that was sort of my...
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was my jump into journalism.
Yeah.
And ironically, because, again, it was a small town, the editor went on maternity leave between my sophomore and junior years. And this would never happen anywhere, but they made me the editor for the summer as a sophomore in college.
Oh, really?
So and you did everything. You did, you know, sure. You did darkroom work and obituaries and sports and just, you didn't know what you'd do every day. But that was a wonderful experience. Then I also started working at the local radio station, just the Sunday morning shift.
Mm-hmm.
That was really the first time I got behind a mic.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not real involved. I'd insert commercials and play the morning church shows on Sunday morning.
Right.
But that was really the first time behind a commercial mic.
Yeah.
Besides doing all the announcements and things we did at school, as I mentioned.
After college, did you go back to where your hometown? Or
I did.
Okay.
Right out of college, I went back to the newspaper.
So when
I was sending resumes to TV and radio stations.
But when you went back, people by this time, kind of like in school, you were the go-to guy for announcing. Did you do that kind of stuff in your community?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. There weren't a lot of opportunities.
We
didn't have community theater or big productions. It was, like I say, a very small town. But
all right, so you put your resumes out, you're out of college, and where does that take you?
I was willing to go anywhere, which you need to be for that first broadcast job.
Right.
I sent 90 resumes. I used to have a box of rejection letters that I would take to career days and dump them out to show people, you know, expect this.
Right.
And I really was willing to go anywhere. And my first offer was a 20-hour-a-week job in Athens, Ohio University.
Mm-hmm.
And it was to produce a 10 o'clock newscast.
Really?
Ironically, a student newscast, but they had a professional producer for it. So I did, and I was fortunate. That was 3 hours away, so mm-hmm. I didn't have to move that far away.
Mm-hmm.
But that was my first job, 20 hours a week. Because I was a part-time employee of Ohio University, I was able to get half my tuition paid if I took more classes.
Oh, that's nice.
So I just took advantage of that and went ahead and got a master's degree in journalism.
Yeah, cool.
So I was there about 2.5 years. And then again, started sending out the resumes.
Yeah.
Fortunate again, because I know kids and colleagues who had to go all over the country for that first job.
Mm-hmm.
My next job was in Charleston, West Virginia. So I didn't have
to. So you were almost back home.
Another hour and a half.
Yeah.
From Athens, Ohio to Charleston.
Yeah.
But I was in a bureau in eastern Kentucky. So that's what brought me to Kentucky.
That's what did
I went to work for the Charleston station, but lived in Paintsville, Kentucky.
I bet you found, and have over the years maybe realized, when you talked about that job as editor at your college, and you had to do everything, how valuable that has been for you, as opposed to somebody, I guess, who may have grown up in a big city and all they did was anchor. I mean, you had to do it all. And,
yeah.
You know, just like this Spirit of the Bluegrass thing, you showed up and did your own camera work. Did you do your own editing?
I did, yes.
I mean, the experience that you got way back then is still working for you today.
That's right. And because I learned those different skills and I'm willing to do it,
mm-hmm.
that's probably why I get to do Spirit of the Bluegrass.
Yeah.
I get to do it the way I want to do it.
Yeah.
I pitched it. It's my idea. It's my baby. And, you know, I do things on the weekends and just whenever I can squeeze time in.
Right.
Because if I had to do it with a photographer or I didn't know how to shoot, you know, 9 times out of 10, halfway through your shoot, you get called off to go cover a fire or a drug bust or something that would limit your time.
So you are in the Eastern Bureau. You're in Eastern Kentucky Bureau for this particular channel, I guess,
mm-hmm.
and live in Paintsville up in Johnson County. Take us from there. How did that evolve into finally landing in Lexington?
Yeah, that was an interesting job, too, because that was before we had a satellite truck or any way to get the video back to Charleston other than driving it. So that was about an hour and 45-minute drive.
Mm-hmm.
I'd do that like 2 days a week. I would shoot 2 or 3 stories that could be held,
mm-hmm.
drive to Charleston, edit in Charleston, leave them stories for the next 3 days, and go back and do another batch.
And you know, in today's world, that's some people who are listening that may be interested in any kind of news or broadcast, that's old school.
Very old school.
And you don't think about it anymore. I mean, I was telling somebody one day about this program of how now it's very easy for me to go through and edit out a cough or whatever. Whereas back in the day, I think one of the reasons we didn't do these programs was because you spliced with tape and it took you forever to do this kind of stuff. And if you look back at some of the classic radio broadcast of the day and realize what they had to do to get to that point, it makes you appreciate the technology that we have today.
It certainly does, yeah. Our bureau reporters now just drop their story into an FTP file and pull it out. You know?
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So you're driving it back
and forth,
a couple of times. So you were covering Kentucky stories for a West Virginia channel?
Yes, there? Because okay. part of the market reached the
okay.
Prestonsburg, Pikeville, Paintsville area, mm-hmm. Magoffin County.
So, yeah. yeah.
7 or 8 counties there.
Okay. Now, how old would you have been at that time?
25.
All right.
24.
Personally, at what point in time did you catch the eye of that lady that's running your household out there? Would that have been in that era?
No.
Okay,
no.
So much later.
Much later.
Okay, we don't want to forget to talk about her or those
right.
kids, too.
That's right.
Tell us about, we'll just do it now. Tell us about your wife and family.
Okay, my wife, Elizabeth, works at Kentucky Horse Park Foundation. She's a grant writer.
Oh, yeah?
Raises money for the foundation,
yeah, yeah,
so that's
yeah.
a fun job. It's just a part-time job, which is wonderful.
Sure.
So she gets home right about the time I need to go to work. We avoided a lot of daycare. We don't see each other much except on the weekends, but it's been a really nice situation. But I didn't get married until I was 42.
Wow.
And I was set up with Elizabeth as my wife yeah. on a blind date. So I didn't know her at all when I was 24.
Yeah, no. No, you had just turned 24 if you flip those numbers.
Yeah,
42.
Exactly. So I was very late about
wow.
So I feel like the grandfather in the school pickup line some days when I see everybody else who's picking up their children. But it worked out great. So she went to the University of Cincinnati. She's a Kentucky girl from Henderson.
Okay.
She went to Transylvania University.
Mm-hmm.
And again, just through a series of events, we were set up on a blind date and it worked out. And that's really what brought me to Jessamine County. When we got engaged, we started looking for a home that mm-hmm. we could make together.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted some space. You know,
yeah.
it's just hard to find that in Lexington.
Yes.
And that's really what brought us down this way, to get a nice size yard and a
right.
place where we could
right.
have the dog and hopefully someday raise some kids. And,
yeah.
and now we do have I have a son who's a 6th grader at West Middle
yeah.
and a daughter who's a 3rd grader at Rosenwald Dunbar.
How many times in your, let's see, your kid's been in school now for six, probably 7 years, if he had preschool. How many mm-hmm. times have you been asked to come to career day?
I've done a couple and probably been asked more, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
I love to do it when I can work it out.
Sure.
Sometimes it's hard.
All right, well, we go back now to your professional career. You're in doing the West Virginia station.
Right.
Take us on down the road.
Well, sometimes I would cover things kind of this way, you know, like maybe in Moorhead
mm-hmm.
or West Liberty.
Mm-hmm.
And I would overlap with reporters from Lexington, who mm-hmm. I got to know some of them. And I started, you know, started to get old driving that drive every week, a couple times to Charleston.
Now, what year would that have been, Mark?
That would have been 1986, 87.
Okay. All right.
And so I got to know some people over in this market. And they told me about an opening at WLEX, and I applied for that and got it. And that was... I came right around Thanksgiving of 87 to WLEX.
Do you remember who would have been the anchor then?
Mike Berry and Mandy Shannon.
Wow. Boy, that's flashback.
Yeah.
I remember growing up a guy, now this has been a long time ago, Peter Stoner. Remember that name?
I know the name. They talked about him.
And he would have been in the late 60s, early 70s maybe,
uh-huh.
and had really dark, big glasses, and I can see him
yeah.
right now. But some of those names, and Mike Berry, I hadn't thought about
it. Right before Mike, I guess before I got there, was Bob Hale.
You forgot about yeah. him. Oh, that's fun to think. And
yeah.
Mindy Shannon, are these people
right.
around anywhere?
Yes, Mindy's still around. She, her husband works at Habitat for Humanity, and she does a lot for them.
Yeah.
And Mike is in Louisville.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. So you stay there at LEX for 7 years. Is that right?
That's
so
right.
What you said?
That's right.
And eventually, I guess it was around the mid-90s, the 56 went on the air. Is that right?
Yes. We went on air January 2nd, 1995.
Yeah.
So I was, the last half of 94, I had moved into being the morning anchor at Channel 18,
mm-hmm.
which is a whole different ball game, going to work at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it. It's fun to be part of a morning show because of the atmosphere, but it's also hard.
Sure.
The hours
yes,
are hard.
It is.
And they were already laying groundwork for a 10 o'clock newscast at Fox, produced through the facilities of WKYT.
Mm-hmm.
And they called me about November. I mean, this was going to go on the air in January, and they still didn't have their anchor. And they wanted... Most of the employees are WKYT employees, but Fox wanted to hire one guy who was their guy.
Yeah.
And they called me out of the blue. I didn't seek the job, and I didn't even think I wanted to be part of it, to be honest with you. It sounded real iffy, and
mm-hmm.
who knew if anybody would watch mm-hmm. news at 10 o'clock, and would you have a job 6 months from now?
Right.
But I talked to them about it, and they assured me at WKYT that if this doesn't fly, then we'll make you part of our staff.
Mm-hmm.
So I was willing to give it a try. And I was there on day one when it signed on, and the only one who still is there.
Yeah, that's what, 22 years? Is that right?
Almost, yeah.
You've been the 10 o'clock anchor for that all those years?
I have, yeah.
That's rare.
And it was a half-hour show when we started. Now it's an hour.
Yeah, but that's unusual.
Yeah.
For anybody in well, any kind of broadcast, for that matter, to have that kind of... length.
Yeah, and I don't know if I didn't have the gumption to explore anything else or what the excuse is, but I don't want to go anywhere else now. I'm very happy.
You know, I guess the only other one that I can think of are our KYT, and that would be Sam Dick and Barbara Bailey, yeah. Maybe. But
and Bill Bryant.
And Bill, he's well, and of course, Rob Brahma. Everybody right. at KYT, all of those people, must be a pretty good place to work. Yeah, other than that, there's massive change. So to stay somewhere like you have, that's amazing. Yeah,
I don't know how employable I am now when you get in your mid-50s. But
well, you're doing something right, evidently. Happy. How many co-anchors have you had? Do you have any idea?
I've only had, I've had four, but one of them was Jennifer Palumbo twice.
Yeah.
So Melanie Glasscock was my original co-anchor.
Oh, my gosh.
And she's actually the one who set me up on the blind date with my wife.
Really?
She was, and I trusted her judgment. She was judgment.
Miss Kentucky?
She was.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
She was the first one, and then Jennifer Palumbo, mm-hmm. Then Jennifer got out of the business for a while, and mm-hmm. Then it was Miranda Combs. Mm-hmm. Jennifer came back in the business,
yeah,
and she, again, got out recently, and now it's Eric Abe.
Okay.
So I guess that is four.
You talked about how different it was to the morning show. Leave me a little more detail about that. Most of my radio career has been in the mornings, mm-hmm. still is. And it is hard. It is hard. But how much different is it, other than getting up earlier, than working what you do? Because what's your shift now? What time do you go in?
3 o'clock.
And get off at 11?
11:30.
Okay. Yeah. So second shifts, how different is it for you?
Well, the morning shift, I would go in about 3:30 or 4 a.m. Mm-hmm. So, of course, then you're up 45 minutes to an hour before that, getting ready to go to work. And you go in, and you might be the first person in there. There's nobody laying the groundwork for anything. So you're just kind of walking in cold. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of an interesting situation to be in every morning. I don't think that's the case now. There are people staffed throughout the night, but then there was no one there. Mm-hmm. And I really do think the hardest part of it is the lifestyle change, because you need to go to bed at 8 o'clock or 8:30. In the summer,
right.
It's daylight and everybody's running their lawnmowers, and it's hard to sleep.
It's hard.
So you got used to being tired all
the
time.
It's hard.
Yeah.
And it would have been any harder if you'd had kids then.
Yes. Because I was single, I was able to handle it better, I think.
Yeah. Do you now write your own stories? Or is it – because back then, I'm assuming you – You probably had to do a little bit of everything.
Yeah. Of course, I write the Spirit of the Bluegrass stories.
Yeah.
I write what the anchors do now mostly. We write the promos that you see throughout the night, just a little 10, 15, 20 second, coming up tonight at 10 things.
Mm-hmm.
We produce those and write those. We write the local headlines that crawl in the ticker across the bottom mm-hmm. of the screen. That takes some time in putting those things.
Mm-hmm.
I write the 5 things to know before you go to bed segment every night.
Okay.
That's a popular segment.
Sure.
And I kind of go in there and scan all the satellite feeds and try to find 5 things to stick in there.
Yeah.
And I usually write the entertainment report. But the local news, an individual reporter is assigned to each of those stories and is out writing their own story.
And nowadays, the pool to draw from to do all that is so massive. It's not just one AP machine in the back of the room typing off the continuous paper and ringing if you had an emergency.
Right.
Now, with what's available on the internet and all that, I mean, it's very easy, I would think, even though you have to write it, to pull a variety, if you will.
It is most days, but there are drought days too.
Yeah.
You really have a focus on what you want to put in there. But, the word always is gatekeeper. We've always been gatekeepers. Mm-hmm. All this stuff is there, and we decide what to let through the gate and put into the newscast. So, people don't always agree with our decisions, or they don't know what didn't make it through the gate. But that's a challenge. To figure out, pick and choose what to use and what not to use.
Well, that brings up an interesting conversation. What would somebody complain about? The fact that their story wasn't covered, or?
Yeah. We get an awful lot of people who call with something that's very important to them, and we
mm-hmm.
understand that.
Sure.
But it really is just important to them.
Right.
And it wouldn't be a good, they have a bone to pick with somebody,
okay.
a neighbor or someone in government, or a lot of child custody cases.
Yeah,
You cover one, you have to cover
them all.
That's
right.
So we just don't. We just can't touch those kind of stories. And we don't belittle the person's interest in it or the reason why it's important to them. But we're broadcasters, so it has to reach a broad audience.
They're called that for a reason. Thinking back over your career in Lexington, we'll narrow it to Lexington. Can you remember maybe one of the top one or two stories you've covered that was just over the top? And I guess in a couple of ways. We could probably go a couple of ways on that. Maybe the most exciting things you ever covered. And on the other hand, maybe the most tragic or sad things you've ever covered.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, weather's always huge, and the ice storm. I forget what year that was now, but that was a huge thing that really kept us all at the station around the clock, right, because we didn't have electric at home either.
You know? Yeah, right.
You just went wherever there was some heat, and covered really a lot of misery. But yet it was very important for people to be tuned in to see those kind of stories. Clear back to my Channel 18 days, I remember it's proper to call it a race riot when the Tony Sullivan was shot by a local police officer, and we had national media coming in here because there was marching in the streets, and you know, that was a kind of a nervous time to go into some situations.
Yeah,
and sometimes there are situations like that. Now I'm in a position now where I can do the featurey stories. I think my demeanor is more geared toward that. You need all kind of people on staff. You need those people who can be bulldogs and go uncover scams and ambush interview people.
Right.
That's not really my demeanor.
Yeah.
And you need
people
who don't do that as well.
Right.
And I realize my limitations.
And you know, one thing about your job, especially our your field reporters, they sometimes can be in some very precarious positions. And I think about the event that happened a couple of years ago where the lady was interviewing someone at the racetrack. And remember, the guy walked up and actually shot the reporter and shot the person being interviewed, and just out of the blue. I mean, and things, and you don't think about things like that. But when you cover some of these stories that are very sensitive, there's always that possibility. You kind of got to watch everywhere, don't you?
There is. Unfortunately, now, just like in the old days, you're by yourself a lot of times. The gear has gotten lighter. It's more common to send someone out by themselves. Mm-hmm. We realize there are certain situations, though, you shouldn't go by yourself.
Right.
We really try not to put people in those situations.
Yeah.
Not to change gear, but I just thought of it. A story that was very memorable to me has a Jessamine County tie and led to a lot of follow-up stories with me. It was the story with Jarrett's Joy Cart.
Oh, yes.
And,
yes.
I won an Emmy for a story I did about that. And wrote a book about Jarrett. So that one, and I'm still great friends with the Mineers. So
we interviewed,
that's one that's been long going.
One of our past guests. We did a show on that, and it was a very nice show, too. And good to get that word out. That's an interesting show. So how many of the, and I guess, are they regional or statewide Emmys have
regional,
you won?
Regional, yes. Mm-hmm. Three.
I've won three,
but I'm on a drought. I think the last one was in 2001.
Yeah.
I've been nominated several times since. They're hard to win.
How does that work? I mean, does people from your station nominate you? How does...
You submit, if you think you have a piece that might be Emmy worthy, you submit it. There's, of course, a pretty hefty fee involved, so you have to feel really good about it.
Right.
And then it's sent out to a different market.
Where, not here.
Right. Okay. People that don't know you, I think, has to go through five or six judges.
Oh, wow.
And then there's a big ceremony every year somewhere in the market. Last year was in Cincinnati. And you go and you put on your tux and you do the red carpet just like it was, you're watching something from L.A. And you either come home with a trophy or you don't, but it's a lot of fun. And
good.
And you just keep trying.
I think I know the answer to this question because of the fact you've been there since 95, but have you ever really thought about doing anything else? Is this where you want to retire?
This is where I want to retire. The only thing that would maybe change for me is if some great opportunity opened with daytime hours.
Yeah.
We don't have a day. You know, I can't move to a 5 or a 6 o'clock show at Fox 56. We don't have that.
Right.
And it has gotten to the point where there are a lot of activities that my kids are in at night that I like to go see.
Sure.
My bosses are very accommodating if I need to take a long lunch break or dinner break to go to see those things. Mm-hmm. But still, you do miss out on some things. And I get up at 7 and they're out the door at 7:45 and they're in bed when I get home.
Yeah.
So that's the only thing that might cause me to make a career change. But otherwise, I want it to be in Central Kentucky.
Yeah.
Or whatever
this,
it is.
This is home.
It is now, yes.
This is home. You said you've been in Jessamine County, how many, 13 years?
13 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen any big changes in the news as far as, I don't know what it would be, but from starting in Lexington back at LEX, whenever that was, what's changed in our area here?
Certainly the growth. There's been a lot of growth since I came here in 1986. It's amazing how all the, it's really regional coverage now. All the counties kind of just, you go right from one right into the next. The growth is amazing, and we've covered a lot of that. Unfortunately, and consultants kind of lean newsrooms this way, we cover more crime than we used to. I don't know if there is more crime or we just cover it more, but it's still a safe place to live, I feel, overall, but that gets more focus than it used to get. And our just as a news gathering operation, you know, I think, or maybe all operations, you're kind of asked to do more with less, you know, fewer people,
exactly,
fewer resources.
Yeah.
But there's more hours of news on than there's ever been.
Right. You know, one of the things that I would think that you have to really watch, especially when you're covering news. Now, I wouldn't think so much with weather or sports, but news. You've got stories that are really good stories, and then you've got some that are really bad. I'm talking about the subject matter.
Right.
And there's got to be a fine line that you would walk as a reporter or even an anchor to not get yourself too emotionally involved in some things. Now, there's some things that would be good to get involved. You just mentioned Jarrett's cart. I mean, one of the greatest things that ever happened to Central Kentucky, and a lot of people have benefited. But some of the stuff that happens, the tragedies, I don't know if you knew this or not, but since 1991, I've been a licensed funeral director and embalmer. It's one of my things. I don't do it anymore, but I'm still licensed. And you have to walk a very fine line when you're dealing with families, because you want to be compassionate, but the last thing they need is a crying funeral director. So, and I could see where it would be the same way, especially a reporter, to just state the facts, just say it like it is, and try not to show any kind of bias one way or the other.
Right.
That's hard.
It can be hard. And I recall a story a couple of years ago where a guy went into a home at random in Versailles and just stabbed a little boy to death.
Remember that? Yes.
And the family was at a vigil, and they were singing, I think, Silent Night or some song that was the little boy's favorite Christmas song. And we came out on camera and we were all choked up. I mean, you can't not be.
Yes.
I just, you know, when you hear you as a parent, or that's a human.
Sure.
You can't just keep a straight face during a story like that.
Yeah.
And then the stories, as you know, it's just the meth bus and the drug bus and the heroin overdoses has gotten so huge that it's a shame that's almost not news now when there's an overdose, because it's so common.
Yeah. And what's getting to that point also, unfortunately, is shootings and things like that.
Yeah.
It's becoming more and more commonplace. I mean, it's scary. It's scary to think that you could possibly go to an open-air concert and not come home.
Well, you're right about that.
You know, there's just so much stuff out there. And you made a comment, you don't know if there's more crime or you're just covering more. I think there's more crime, personally. That's my opinion. But it is news, and it's stuff that you have to get out there and you have to let people know about.
And when people say to me, "You have too many murders on the news," I said, well, I guess I'm glad we live in a place where it is still news if someone gets killed.
That's
not
true.
So commonplace that it's, you know, the New York Times page 7 article,
right,
paragraph. It's still front page news when someone gets killed here.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm glad we live in a place where it's not that common.
Well, and to be quite honest, in Doug's mind, if you ignored that stuff, we would all become complacent about it.
Yeah.
And your guard's not up anymore.
Yeah.
And even though it might be tough to put your guard up for some of those things, at least be aware it's out there.
Yeah. But people say, oh, your news is, I can't watch it. It's all so sad. It's all so bad. But I contend that if you keep watching, yes, that first 10 minutes is probably mostly all bad, but we really do try to balance it.
Right.
We have the five things to know and the spirit of the bluegrass and the inside entertainment, and we try to put other things in there, too, that's not all doom and gloom. And the philosophy of the 10 o'clock news from day one has been to kind of throw about everything that's happened in there in some form or fashion, realizing that that's the only newscast a lot of people see. They get home too late to see 5 or 6 o'clock news, and they're conked out by 11.
Yeah, that's right.
So we try to kind of be a kitchen sink newscast.
Yeah.
Where we throw a little bit of everything. And if something big happened at 10 a.m., it's still going to be in there at 10 p.m.
Right.
We don't assume you've seen it or heard about
it. Yeah. Very interesting. Well, as you know, time flies when you're having fun and on the air, and we are at the end of our program. But I want to tell you how much I appreciate you coming in. And folks, you are listening not only to a newsman here, you're listening to a Jessamine County resident. His children go to school here. You know, even though you may see him on a station in Lexington, he's still one of us, and we consider you one of us.
I'm happy to be here.
And we hope that you are here for quite a long time.
Thank you.
Good luck with the next 20. How many years have you been in the business? 31?
It's 31, something like that.
Yeah, well, maybe another 31 to go.
I probably passed the halfway point.
Well, however long it is, we hope that you're a part of Central Kentucky and continue to be, especially Jessamine County.
Thank you, Doug.
My thanks to Marvin Bartlett for coming in this morning and talking to us. Tell us a little bit about his history and his connection to Jessamine County, Kentucky. I appreciate you coming in every Saturday morning for All Things Jessamine. We'll do it again next week. Don't forget my regular show. I'm on every weekday morning from 6 until 8 a.m. Get you up and get you moving right here on Jess FM 105.9.
Beginnings are important, especially when it comes to building a future. From start to finish, Farmers Bank of Jessamine County will be with you every step of the way. Whether it's a house, a car, a college fund, or saving for retirement, it all starts here. Stop by any of our four convenient Jessamine County locations today or visit us on the web at myfarmersbank.net. Banking with friends and neighbors, Farmers Bank of Jessamine County, Equal Housing Lender, Member FDIC.